Morning. Our first case is the Regents of the University of Colorado and others versus students for concealed carry on campus. Case number 10-SC-344. Argument is set for an hour. Are both parties ready? I would ask each of you to, you have to keep track of your time, and please state your name at the beginning of the argument. Proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Patrick O'Rourke. My attorney registration number is 26195. I'm appearing today on behalf of the Regents of the University of Colorado, as well as the individually named defendants who are official capacity defendants as officers of the University of Colorado. This case, although presenting issues about the Regents' weapon policy, raises important questions about the circumstances under which the General Assembly will have been determined to have divested the Board of Regents of its constitutional and statutory powers. And I believe that in analyzing the Court of Appeals decision, the primary error can be identified on page 9 of the opinion, in which the Court of Appeals said that if the General Assembly had wished to preserve the Regents' ability to regulate weapons on campus, quote, it knew how to do so. And the reason why I believe that's error is that it turns the rules of statutory and constitutional construction that this court has adopted in cases involving the Regents upside down. Rather than being a situation where the General Assembly has to act in order to preserve the authority of the Regents, this court's precedent stands for the proposition that the General Assembly must clearly and unmistakably intend to divest the Board of Regents of its authority to govern the university. That authority stems from three places. First, constitutionally, it stems from Article 8, Section 5 of the Colorado Constitution, which indicates that the Regents have the general supervision of the university unless otherwise provided by law. And under the precedent of this court, that provision means that the Regents retain the authority to supervise the university unless and until there is appropriately targeted legislation removing that power of general supervision from the Regents. Secondly, not only does it stem from the Constitution itself, it also stems from Colorado statute, notably Section 2321.12, in which the General Assembly has explicitly acknowledged the Board of Regents' authority to enact laws for the governance of the University of Colorado, recognizing that the Board of Regents, as a constitutionally created state institution of higher education and its governing body, have the authority to enact legislation governing the campus.
So, Rock, can I ask you to really, I guess, the difficulty I have with that argument is Ramos. So maybe you might address that. I'm sure you're going to.
I was absolutely planning on addressing Ramos. And in Ramos, I think that there's a couple things that you have to look at textually from the opinion in order to understand what Ramos decided and what the scope of the opinion is. And despite the suggestions to the contrary by Students for Concealed Carry, Ramos in no way displaced Associated Students and Leroy. In fact, the court said that it was mindful of its prior decisions in that case. And the key language that governs Ramos is that the court indicated in that case that when the General Assembly passed Colorado's anti-discrimination statutes, it acted, quote, in a singularly expansive fashion, and that it provided a definition of employer that was virtually all-inclusive. In doing so, it stated that the definition of employer not only included the state of Colorado, the institutions of the state of Colorado, but it said, most importantly, the provision saying that it applied to, quote, every other person, employing persons in this state. And based upon that, the court said, we can find evidence that the General Assembly intended to apply this statute to all employers in the state of Colorado, public, private, and that this is a, quote, virtually all-inclusive definition. When the General Assembly enacted the preemption clause of Section 214 of the Concealed Carry Act, it did not speak with the same breadth of language. Particularly, first, it specifically excluded the state from the operation of the Concealed Carry Act and said that it does not supplant any provision of state law, and the university is a state institution of higher education. A has been empowered by the General Assembly to enact laws for the governance of that state institution. Second, the General Assembly came through and said that in Section 235.106, that the regents have the authority to pass rules and regulations for the governance of the university and for the safety and welfare of students, employees, and property. And perhaps most importantly, Section 214's preemption clause, which is the only provision of the Concealed Carry Act that would serve to operate to divest local governments of their ability to pass laws, is confined to that entity, local governments. And so in contrast to Ramos, where you had a provision that said that it applies to the state, the institutions, and every other person employing persons in the state, you have an express limitation within the Concealed Carry Act Section 214 as to what the scope of the preemption clause is intended to be limited to, which is local governments. For this case to be equivalent to Ramos, it would be the Concealed Carry Act would need to say that it applies to local governments, the state, and every other body that has the ability to pass regulations. The breadth of Ramos was in that provision saying every other person, demonstrating that universal intent not only to capture the state institutions, but every other person, public or private, expressing an unequivocal state policy that the discrimination laws were intended to encompass. And what I think is also important in distinguishing Ramos is that the court looked at whether or not Regent Law itself made appointments at the University of Colorado subject to the statutes of the state of Colorado. And in three different places within Ramos, the court came through and said that Regent Law makes appointments of faculty and all other persons at the University of Colorado subject to the statutes of the state of Colorado. The university has recognized the authority of the state of Colorado to pass statutes involving employment and make those preeminent over Regent Law. In this case, you're actually talking about the exact opposite situation, where the General Assembly, by passing 235.106 and saying that the university has the authority to pass rules and regulations for the welfare and safety of students, employees, and property, has said, we recognize that the Board of Regents, as the governing body of an institution of higher education, is best positioned to determine what is necessary to protect that institution.
Well, we have here important Colorado constitutional rights here. Do we not? You're not arguing for an exemption from the Constitution. So what's the rationale for this complete ban?
First, on the constitutional question, dealing with the Concealed Carry Act, I don't believe that portion of that the Act raises a constitutional question, because when you look at Article 2, Section 13, describing the right to bear arms, it says that nothing within that constitutional provision shall be used to justify the practice of concealed carry. So when you're dealing with the scope of the Concealed Carry Act itself and whether or not it preempts regent authority to govern the university, the Constitution itself says we don't speak as to concealed carry. I'll address the constitutional claim in just a second, but to answer your question as to the important policy of the region's policy, is that there are governmental institutions that serve particular purposes. Maintaining the tranquility of the educational environment and making it a place that is most conducive to study and experimentation is something that the U.S. Supreme Court has recognized as one of the prime components of academic freedom that is embodied within a university itself. So that when the Board of Regents comes and says, we are passing a weapons policy in order to promote the tranquility of the educational environment, it is essentially doing something that the United States Supreme Court has recognized that it can do in the spirit of academic freedom and promoting that atmosphere that is most conducive to education and experimentation. And I think that when you get to the constitutional question, even if you go to the U.S. Supreme Court's opinion in Heller or McDonald, which naturally deal with the Second Amendment to the Constitution, they explicitly say that nothing in their decisions, which dealt with municipalities' regulations over firearms, they said nothing in this decision is intended to affect either of two things. First, it is not intended to affect certain types of long-standing prohibitions upon ownership of guns by certain classes of people who are disqualified from ownership, such as felons, the habitually impaired, people of that nature. It also said that there's a category of sensitive places. And the two things that they included within the description of sensitive places were schools and government buildings. And in the footnote in Heller, they said that regulations of the type that set schools and buildings are presumptively lawful, recognizing that notwithstanding a right to bear arms and an individual right to bear arms, that there is an important governmental interest where the government has the presumptive ability to lawfully regulate the bearing of arms in those environments. Schools and government buildings, the type of exact facilities that the University of Colorado owns and operates.
Well, how does it affect tranquility if somebody's carried a concealed weapon? Nobody else can see it. If it was a pistol on the hip, that might interrupt somebody's peace of mind, but I don't understand how necessarily compliance with the concealed weapon law at all affects tranquility. So will you explain how the general notion of tranquility and the constitutional protected right of self-defense here need to be accommodated?
How there might be a rational connection between the two. I believe that has been stated first that across the United States, governing boards of institutions of higher education have made the determination that campus safety is something that is best regulated by the campus. In particular, if you refer to the IACLEA report, which was part of the exhibits within there, the Campus Police Association has indicated the campuses are unique places. They are dealing with individuals who are younger, that they are places, unfortunately, sometimes where young individuals are making mistakes with drug and alcohol. They are making mistakes in terms of their behavior. They have noted that the possibility that within a campus environment that there could be an accidental discharge, that there could be something along the lines of a party that gets out of hand, are all things that distinguish the campus environment from other environments. And more importantly, we've seen from the aftermath of incidents like Columbine, incidents like Virginia Tech, that campus environments are places where unlawful activity can occur and that people will target out groups of people in that environment. The general regents are acting within their particularly lawful authority to regulate the educational environment and that institution when they say, this is what we think we need to enact in order to have an atmosphere where people feel safe to study, where people feel like they have the ability to best learn, be educated, and to accommodate that. And this court's jurisprudence has indicated that when the regents make those type of truly educational decisions as to what type of environment is necessary, that they are entitled to deference because they have unique expertise that governs their ability to regulate the university. And the reason for the University of Colorado are unique in the respect that they are directly elected by the people. That this is not a situation where the regents are not constitutionally accountable. If the electorate believes that the Board of Regents has somehow erred in its calculation of whether or not there should be weapons permitted on campus, the electorate has the direct ability to change that decision by expressing votes for regents who will change the policy. But the presumption is that the regents have that ability to lawfully govern and mandate the educational environment. Oh, it looked like you had a question, Justice Martin.
Oh, I've been waiting patiently, yes. Actually, if I could ask you to return to your discussion of Ramos, and my question would be, do you see Ramos as entirely consistent with the predecessor cases, the open records, the open meetings, or do you see it as in any way refining or advancing the analysis that we had put forth before?
That's a question that I've actually wrestled with in my own mind. And here's how I've reconciled it, which is I believe that Ramos is consistent with the court's prior decisions, except in two respects. The first is that I think that Ramos is correct in which when it describes that the General Assembly can only divest the Board of Regents of its authority to govern the university when there is clear and unmistakable intent that it intended to do so. The two places where I believe that Ramos was a little bit inconsistent with Associated Students in Newberoy, and where I actually believe it got slightly off track, was in two places. First, there was a discussion about limiting clauses within Ramos. And the discussion in Ramos related to the limiting clauses was to the effect that the Open Meetings Law and the Open Records Act included language that said that it was subject to other legislation that was passed by the General Assembly. Why I believe that discussion got slightly off track in Ramos is because Article 8, Section 5 of the Colorado Constitution already serves in effect as a rule of statutory construction. It says, in effect, that if the General Assembly wishes to divest the Board of Regents of their authority to govern, it must say so. So rather than having a situation where the statute has to preserve the region's constitutional authority by the inclusion of a limiting clause, the Constitution itself acts as a constraint upon the General Assembly's ability to have general legislation operate against the regions.
But is Ramos, in that respect, incorrect? And do we need to correct that in an opinion here in order to reach the result that you are advocating? Or if we affect that argument, that analysis in Ramos, isn't your argument in a bit of trouble without a similar limiting clause here?
I believe not. First, because the limiting clause was only one thing that the court mentioned in support of its decision in Ramos, but there are many other distinguishing factors, particularly the key textual differences between the statute that was considered in Ramos, which had the breadth of the language that it was operable to every person, employing persons in the state of Colorado. This one does not have the same type of broad catch-all language within it that was so crucial to the court in Ramos. I also believe that the Ramos case expressly recognized that the appointments made at the University of Colorado are subject to the statutes passed by the General Assembly, so that there were two other key distinguishing bases that are different between this case and the Ramos case, either of which is sufficient for the court to depart from Ramos and determine that this case is much more like Associated Students in Newberoy than Ramos was. Because what Ramos expressly recognized was that Associated Students and Newberoy remained good law, that they were inapplicable in those particular circumstances. And I would suggest that the particular circumstances in this case are much closer to Associated Students and Newberoy than Ramos.
To the extent that we buy into that analysis, which really is sort of considering different factors, becomes almost a sort of a weighing process. It seems to me that that's the analysis engaged in by the Attorney General. To the extent that we do that, it seems to me that the potential at least arises in these types of cases that one can arrive at a difficulty in determining that balance. Ordinarily, if a statute's ambiguous, we then go to legislative history. Are we in the same situation here in the event that we see the factors as weighing somewhat evenly? It's somewhat like associated students in a way that it's somewhat like Ramos. Do we then find ambiguity and go to legislative history, or is there for some reason that we would not find ambiguity and rely upon legislative history in this particular kind of problem?
I believe that there is not an ambiguity in this case. Because
and I appreciate that argument. I understand that. I guess my question is, if it weighs evenly, is that an ambiguity? And do we then go to legislative history? So I guess I am asking you to assume something that I understand you would argue against.
Fair enough. I think that under the constitutional rules that have been provided by this court and Associated Students, Uberoy, and Ramos, if you said it weighs evenly, that weighing evenly can't manifest the clear and unambiguous intent necessary to divest so that you would then turn to the legislative history. If it weighs evenly, then you're in a situation where you can't say that it's clear and unambiguous, because finding an ambiguity would mean that the General Assembly has not acted with the requisite specificity that this court requires in order to divest the regents of their presumptive constitutional and statutory authority. And in this case, it's also distinguishing from Ramos in the sense that what this does is it not only overrides the regents' constitutional authority, but it also serves as a repeal by implication of express statutory authority that has been recognized within the University of Colorado's Board of Regents to govern the university and pass laws for the safety and welfare of the campus. Repeal by implication is a disfavored doctrine in this court. And if I may just loop back into one other thing in terms of determining whether or not there's an ambiguity, I think that you have to consider the statutory scheme as a whole. And that statutory scheme is manifested in describing what the problem was the General Assembly was trying to get at. They were trying to get at a situation where cities and counties throughout the state of Colorado were passing different laws that criminalized the possession of weapons. In 29.11.7.101, which is a companion statute passed at the same time to implement the database that would allow for the background searches, the General Assembly explicitly provided that the problem that they were trying to get at was that, quote, cities and counties were passing different laws and creating inconsistency among jurisdictions as to where you could carry a concealed weapon permit. They described that, quote, those local governments had passed laws that subjected citizens to uncertainty as to those areas of the state where they were allowed to carry their concealed weapons. In doing so, the General Assembly explicitly made clear the scope of what they meant by local governments in Section 214, which is that they were addressing this to cities and counties. They were saying to the sheriffs, who are given the authority to administer and enforce the provision of the concealed carry statute, a sheriff doesn't have the ability in Summit County to deny a permit that would be issued in Eagle County. Similarly, that sheriff in Summit County doesn't have the ability not to recognize a permit that would have been issued in Eagle County. But none of these provisions speak to displace the authority of the Board of Regents to enact regulations governing a particular campus. Moreover, under this court's constitutional jurisprudence, this court has determined that the right to bear arms can be limited. And the important thing is that the right to bear arms is subject to a qualification that there must be a provision that allows for self-defense. And it will engraft a provision allowing for self-defense when necessary in order to constitutionally create or to constitutionally spare an enactment. And in this particular case, the weapons control policy creates any type of sanction only when a person has used or possessed a weapon in a way that interferes with the learning environment or otherwise disrupts the operations of the campus.
Well, it's a complete ban, is it not? I'd be interested in your reaction to the sheriff's brief that, in fact, they may have to call upon citizen help on campus to carry out the right of Coloradans to self-defense.
Well, my reaction to that is that, A, it's posing a hypothetical that's never been presented. B, if in those circumstances the sheriffs did that and there was any type of action that was targeted against somebody for supposedly violating the weapons control policy, I believe that in those situations, the defense, which would have to be raised in the proceedings to adjudicate whether or not there was a violation of the policy, that the person would be able to present evidence to say, I did not use or possess a weapon in a way that interfered with the operations of the campus itself. I would like to reserve the remaining 4 minutes of my time if I could.
May it please the court. My name is James Manley. I represent the respondents Eric Moat, Martha Altman, John Davis, and Students for Concealed Carry on campus. This case concerns the respondents' statutory right to possess a concealed firearm and their constitutional right to possess a firearm in their cars. The Concealed Carry Act shows a clear intent by the General Assembly to replace a patchwork of local regulations with one comprehensive rule governing concealed carry throughout the state. And moreover, outright prohibitions on the right to keep and bear arms are per se unconstitutional. That has been the consistent rule in Colorado and elsewhere for more than 70 years. And for those reasons, the Regents' ban violates both the Concealed Carry Act and the Colorado Constitution. Now, the statutory issue in this appeal presents a policy question. What level of government should regulate concealed carry? And the political branches determined in 2003 that there should be one statewide rule governing where concealed carry is authorized. And the Regents lobbied for an exception to the statewide effect of the Concealed Carry Act, but the General Assembly explicitly rejected the idea that universities should be excluded from the Act. And so now the Regents invite this court to rewrite the Concealed Carry Act to include an exception for universities. But just a few days ago, this court declined the opportunity to read additional elements into the dram shop liability statute. And likewise, in this case, the court should decline the Regents' invitation to read an additional exception into the Concealed Carry Act.
Oh, well, I think they're not asking us on a policy. I think what they're saying is Ramos is only partially accurate, and we should go back to some of the things we said in the two earlier cases, and therefore the legislation isn't clear and unmistakable. So maybe you could address that.
Certainly, Your Honor. Associated Students in UBROI have not provided the rule of decision in any subsequent cases. Since Ramos was decided in 1988, every case on point has applied Ramos and not Associated Students. So for 20 years, the General Assembly has known that when it says statewide, the courts will interpret that to mean statewide with only those exceptions that the General Assembly includes. So when the General Assembly passed the Concealed Carry Act, it was on notice that it would not need to explicitly refer to the Regents because it was creating comprehensive statewide legislation.
So, Manley, if I'm not mistaken, your argument now and in your briefs, it's very broad in terms of the extent of Ramos and the limitations of our precedent, Associated Students and Borough. As a matter of fact, it seems to me that you're arguing that they're wrongly decided, that they were overruled by Ramos. Is that correct? And is that really necessary to the argument that you're making?
Well, no, Your Honor, I don't think that it's necessary to say that Associated Students...
Well, what about the first question? Is that your argument?
Well, I think that's one way to read Ramos. I think the narrow way to read Ramos is to say that the court was saying that the only cases, the only statutes that might still be subject to Associated Students and Ubroy are those that contain a limiting clause. And that don't apply broadly to cover the entire state the way the Concealed Carry Act does or the way the Civil Rights Act did in Ramos.
Do you see that? Do you see Ramos as essentially creating that as a litmus test? Either it has the that exception clause or not, and that's the test?
Well, I think Ramos looks to generally three indicators, whether there are comprehensive statewide standards, and here we have those because there's one statewide rule that governs concealed carry in all areas of the state. Whether the statute applies broadly to achieve that purpose, and in Ramos the statute included some narrow exceptions that did not include the regents, and likewise here, there are some narrow exceptions that do not include the regents. And interestingly, the purpose here, the statewide purpose here, is the same as the purpose of the statute in Ramos, which is to secure civil rights. But unlike Ramos, the regents' policy here, in Ramos the policy only affected individuals with a working relationship with the university. Here, the regents' policy affects every person who has a concealed carry permit and drives within the jurisdiction of the campus police. That's not the sort of comprehensive regulation of where concealed carry would be authorized that the General Assembly envisioned when it created the Concealed Carry Act. So those factors, in addition to the absence of a limiting clause, I think is the way that the rule...
So
the rule
ultimately applies. You end up in the same place with a different result as the regents. That is, you argue that there are factors involved and that there's somewhat of a balancing test involved. Is that correct?
I believe that's an accurate statement, Your Honor, yes.
Well, then I guess I'd like to ask you the same question that I asked previously, which is, what is your view on whether you can arrive at ambiguity here, or do you instead agree that there's a requirement of clarity and certainty that leaves no room for ambiguity in legislative history?
Well, first, I think, Your Honor, that the statute is clear. It applies to all areas of the state, and the permits that are created by the statute authorize the permit holders to carry in all areas of the state, except as specifically limited in the statute. Now, the second point is that
Let me have you help you a little bit. I mean, it's sort of the same thing. Is I understand that you think that this is not an even balance, that this clearly weighs in favor of a plain language indication of their clear intent to remove that authority from the regents. Assuming that for the sake of this argument that we didn't agree with that and we have trouble with it and we think it weighs more evenly, you just heard an argument that means the regents prevail because the requirement is for some clarity here. Do you agree with that, or do you think there is a place for ambiguity and then going to legislative history?
Well, so again, the statute, there's no ambiguity in the statute. Whether the court interprets because of its interpretation of Ramos and Associated Students that there's some ambiguity, if the court looks to the legislative history here, it's unmistakable that the General Assembly intended to cover the regents.
Well, but the question is, does it make sense that we would look at legislative history? You heard an argument that we would never look at legislative history here because if it's not clear, that's what the legislature has to do to exclude the or to include the regents.
Well, I suppose the answer is that if there is any ambiguity, the legislative history clears up that ambiguity.
I guess I'm concerned with the fact that you actually began your argument with things from legislative history. I mean, your point has been that the legislature was clear here, and you sort of moved rather freely from the plain language into the legislative history. But ordinarily, we don't go right to legislative history. We certainly don't take testimony and affidavits from legislators, which is some of the stuff that's been submitted in this case. So I guess I would like to understand, you know, what your thoughts are about what do we do if this is not possible to decide on a weighing basis. Does that ever arise? Is there some prerequisite before we move into legislative history in your view? Or as you began your argument, do we commence with legislative history and debate in the General Assembly?
Well, I think the place to start obviously is the statute, and the statute here shows a clear intent to create one uniform rule for concealed carry, and it prohibits contrary regulations repeatedly in Section 201, in 204, and again in Section 214. And it's important to remember that Section 214 starts by saying concealed carry permits authorize the permittee to carry concealed handgun in all areas of the state, except as specifically limited in this section. So looking at just the statute, it would eviscerate those specific limitations in Section 214 if the regents were able to include themselves in that list. If the interplay between Associated Students and Ramos creates an ambiguity that requires the court to go beyond the statute, then the rule in Ramos is really evaporated, because it would mean that the court would have to overrule Ramos and say that no, in fact, the General Assembly does need to explicitly include the regents when it creates statewide legislation, because otherwise there would always be the ambiguity that that you've identified, Justice Martinez.
Counsel, may I use this moment to interrupt? Assuming you brought both a statutory and a constitutional claim, and I'm trying to understand the impact of footnote 4 of your answer brief that suggests that if we agree with you on the statutory issue, there's no need to reach the constitutional claim here. Is that remain your position, or is there some reason we should go ahead and reach the constitutional issue?
Well, for the claims that the respondents, the plaintiffs raised, there is no need to reach the constitutional issue. If their right to carry under the Concealed Carry Act is recognized, then arguably their right to keep and bear arms is vindicated, because there would not be a complete ban as applied to them. Of course, this court's free to reach the constitutional issue if it thinks that that is the most prudent thing to do to provide guidance to the lower courts. But for purposes of the respondent's claims, there would be no need to reach the constitutional.
Well, I'm thinking about this in the posture of the fact that this is on a motion to dismiss and both claims essentially remain in the case. This would be, does this case move forward on either or both claims? And so I'm just wondering your thoughts on whether it's appropriate or necessary for us to reach the constitutional issue. But assuming that you suggest that we should, what impact do Heller and McDonald have on the standard of review? Recognizing, of course, that your claim is brought under the state constitution, not the Second Amendment, but what impact does that characterization of the right to bear arms under the Second Amendment have on our interpretation of the standard of review we would apply here?
Well, I think there are two impacts. First, what Heller and McDonald specifically reject is a rational basis test. And so under Heller and McDonald, the federal courts do not apply the rational basis test to the Second Amendment. And as an aside, this court has never applied the rational basis test either. But the second thing that Heller and McDonald give us is the, as counsel mentioned, the sensitive places exception. But the Virginia Supreme Court's decision in George Mason, the George Mason University case, is instructive here, because there, the Virginia Supreme Court determined that universities were sensitive and upheld a narrowly tailored firearms regulation that did not impose a total ban, and that allowed, among other things, car carry. And for those reasons, the Virginia Supreme Court upheld the ban. But here, As Justice Hobbs noted, we have a total ban. There's a complete ban imposed by the regents on all firearms stored in a car or carried concealed pursuant to the Concealed Carry Act. So I think those two points are the takeaway from McDonald and Heller. The rational basis test does not apply to an enumerated constitutional right, and that even under the sensitive places exception, a total ban would presumably be unconstitutional.
But is this court's articulation in the Robertson case, this reasonable exercise of the police power, does that survive in a post-Heller-McDonald world?
I think it does, Your Honor. I think what Robertson does is go beyond the rational basis test. It looks to the actual legislative rationale considered, not some conceivable rationale, as would be the case under rational basis. And it looks at the severity of the regulations, which would be irrelevant under rational basis. And it also looks at the evidence for and against the regulation, again, an inquiry that would be irrelevant under rational basis. And the concurrence in Robertson plainly calls the court out on this. It's clear that the court is applying something stronger than just rational basis. And so I think Robertson is consistent with Heller and McDonald.
What do we do with the fact that this ordinance, this piece of legislation on behalf of the regents, however you want to characterize it, has no enforcement to it unless you intimidate somebody with this weapon?
That position, Your Honor, is different from the posture that the regents took before this litigation started. Each of the plaintiffs requested permission to carry, recognition of their right to carry, and they were told explicitly that you may not carry on campus. It would be news to, I think, everyone to hear that the regents allow firearms on campus.
I'm just looking at the language of what they passed here, and since we have to accommodate constitutional interests, it appears to me that it is on the first part a total ban, but then when it gets into any kind of a sanction here, it has to do with found to have intentionally or recklessly used or possessed such weapons in a way that would intimidate, harass, injure, or otherwise interfere with the learning and working environment. So despite what opposing counsel said, sounds like if you take as a whole this legislation by the Board of Regents, that they're really only saying is if you intimidate, harass, threaten, injure the tranquility of the educational environment. So why shouldn't we take this just at its words and construe this as a reasonable regulation? You can pack, but you can't pull it out. You know, unless you needed to for self-defense.
Right. And if that were the case, I think that would be that would comply with the Constitution and potentially the Concealed Carry Act, but it's not. The rub is in that last part, where otherwise interferes with the learning and working environment, and the regents plainly state in the beginning of the policy that the mere possession, mere presence of weapons,
I'd like to suggest that's ambiguous and contradictory, this piece of legislation. And we should construe it, shouldn't we not, to avoid the constitutional problem?
If this court were to construe the policy in a way that allowed concealed carry on campus and that allowed car carry, that would satisfy the respondent's claims, and it would satisfy the law. That's just not the way the regents have conducted.
Well, we're entitled to read the words as they are, right?
Certainly. I mean,
aside from their argument,
right,
that it means something else.
And aside from the way that they've enforced the policy, the way that they've enforced the policy.
Well, tell me about that. How do they enforce the policy?
Well, with respect to the plaintiffs here, they enforce the policy by saying that if you bring a firearm onto campus, period, you will be in violation of the policy.
Then what's the sanction?
And the sanction for the students would be expulsion, automatic expulsion.
Well, that's not what this provision says. I don't think. I mean, am I misreading? Maybe we'll hear from the opposing counsel when he gets back up.
I think the rub is in that last section, otherwise interferes with the learning and working environment. And the region stated earlier in the policy that the mere presence of firearms is incompatible with their vision of the learning and working environment. And so the way that I read that last clause is that the mere presence of firearms is incompatible with the learning and working environment.
Counsel, before you move on, could I also ask another question about the scope of your claim? As I read your complaint, it talked about the right to carry concealed weapons in self-defense, sort of a general self-defense. As I read the Court of Appeals opinion, at oral argument at Court of Appeals, you narrowed the claim to the right to possess in a motor vehicle on campus. Is that still the scope of the claim at this point? Simply to possess it in the trunk of your car?
That is the scope of the constitutional claim, Your Honor, yes. The scope
as distinguished from the stat. Okay, perhaps you can.
Yes, as distinguished from the statutory claim, which is the claim under the Concealed Carry Act.
Okay.
That protects the right to carry in all areas of the state, including campuses.
Okay, and the basis for the distinction is that the state constitutional provision expressly exempts concealed carry.
Exactly, Your Honor. And when, you know, when the General Assembly passed the Concealed Carry Act, it stated that it was passing the act to fully effectuate the right to keep and bear arms. And the Concealed Carry Act plainly goes beyond the protections guaranteed by the Constitution to include the right to carry, whereas that protection is not afforded by the Constitution alone.
Mr. Manley, could I ask you to go back to your discussion with Justice Martinez? You indicated that there's a balancing that we had to do with respect to looking at the legislation. Could you just repeat your position? I want to be clear on that. I understand it, that's all.
Well,
what are we balancing and what are the considerations?
The considerations stem from both Associated Students and Ramos, and the considerations are whether there are comprehensive statewide standards, whether the statute applies broadly to achieve a statewide purpose, and that's effectuated through the broad purpose, and then any exceptions are narrowly tailored, and then finally whether there's a limiting clause. And those, I think, are the factors that Ramos looked to, and the factors that the General Assembly had in mind when it crafted the Concealed Carry Act.
So apply that in a brief sentence.
To this session?
Yeah.
What's the balance? What's the balance on behalf of the regents?
The regents,
the constitutional provision, right?
But none of the factors weigh in the regents' favor here. There's comprehensive statewide standards that the General Assembly plainly intended to apply to all areas of the state, with the explicit exceptions they included, and there is no limiting clause. So there's no way that any of the factors tip in the regents' favor. The fact that the regent's law was consistent with the court's decision in Ramos was an aside. The rationale of the court, the reasoning is independent from that fact.
Thank you.
And it makes sense that the General Assembly would have intended to include the regents in the Concealed Carry Act, because the act evinces a clear intent to create a comprehensive statewide civil rights statute.
Let me ask you about that just a little. In Ramos, we found that because of the all employers and the fact that it seemed to include them all, government, non-government. In this case, we have a whole body of language concerning the balance of authority, local versus state. What's of statewide concern? What's of local concern? What's of mixed statewide and local concern? Some of the language in the statute seems to borrow that terminology. What, if anything, should we make of that specifically? Is there any indication there that they're therefore focusing on municipal and county authority versus state authority, as opposed to the broader scope of every employer or every individual that we saw in Ramos?
Well, I think what the General Assembly was focusing on was that policy question that we started with. What level of government should regulate concealed carry? Should it be one statewide rule, or should all of the governments with authority over specific areas create their own rule? And clearly the choice the legislature made was to create one statewide rule.
But none of that seems to me, were they talking, obviously they were talking about the state on the one hand, on the other hand, were they talking about any authority, or were they talking about local government? And which obviously raises the question, if you take the first step, of whether the regions are treated like local government in this respect.
Well, there are two answers to that. I mean, first of all, the Concealed Carry Act is not limited to just local governments. It doesn't say permittees are authorized to carry in all cities and counties, or counties, cities, or municipalities. It says all areas of the state. And so there would have been no reason for the General Assembly to debate an exception for the regents if it didn't intend that language would mean exactly what it says, that permittees are authorized to carry in all areas of the state.
Well, let me interrupt you for a minute. Question, I think, let me just rephrase Justice Martinez's question. Typically, there's a big debate about whether it's a statewide rule, whether it involves the constitutionality of home rule cities and so forth. And that's the three categories that Justice Martinez mentioned. So the point, I think, is that this legislation looks like it was drafted with that in mind, that this is a statewide rule, which would have very little impact, really, with respect to a university, unless if we adopt some argument like Mr. O'Rourke is making, unless the legislation specifically and clearly stated that it applies to a constitutional body like the regions. I don't want to in my colleague's mouth, but that's what I took this question.
I think that's a fair statement, except that it runs up against Loves, where this court said that the legislature would not need to explicitly refer to the regions when it was creating statewide legislation. So in a sense, one way to read Ramos is that it imported some of those doctrines of home rule, statewide jurisprudence.
Sure, and that this would not be a matter of solely local concern, using that analogy, and the state preemption, if you will, would apply.
Exactly, Your Honor. I mean, the other point is also that the General Assembly has described universities as functioning like municipal corporations. So it's possible that when the General Assembly used that language, it had universities in mind. That's sort of tangential to the overall point that the Concealed Carry Act plainly applies to all areas of the state. So, and the rule in Ramos that the legislature would not need to explicitly include the regions in statewide legislation.
What do you do with the provision of the state constitution that seems to say that concealed weapons aren't favored? I mean, that's a pretty startling statement. It's in the Constitution, right?
Right. Well, and of course, the General Assembly can always go beyond what the Constitution provides. The Constitution protects certain rights, and the General Assembly can protect other rights not protected by the Constitution.
But your brief relies very heavily in the amicus briefs on this right of self-defense. But then there's this provision that specifically says, regardless of what we said otherwise in the Constitution, we're not promoting the carriage of concealed weapons. Doesn't that leave the regents with some authority here to regulate it reasonably?
Well, Your Honor, in the absence of the Concealed Carry Act, it would. It would leave the regents with some authority to regulate concealed carry. But it would not give the regents the authority to totally eviscerate the right to keep and bear arms, which is what they've done here, much like what Lakewood did in Lakewood v. Pillow, which is to prohibit people from lawfully carrying firearms in their cars in over a large urban area. There's simply no way to square the Regents' reading of the Concealed Carry Act with the purpose and the plain text of the Act. The Concealed Carry Act is clear that it is intended to govern all areas of the state, to authorize permittees to carry in all areas of the state. And it's intended to create one comprehensive statewide rule on concealed carry so that permittees know that they can carry in certain areas and not others, and that those areas are clearly laid out in the statute. And these individuals are law-abiding, over 21 years old. They've gone through a 10-point fingerprint-based background check. We're talking about a very narrow universe of people here that have been approved by local law enforcement to carry in all areas of the state. They've been judged to be safe everywhere in the state. They don't become unsafe just because they would step onto the university campus. So the policy judgment that the General Assembly made when it entrusted sheriffs to permit these individuals, when it created a comprehensive rule, that policy judgment should be given life by this court. And it would be contrary to the entire body of precedent of this court to apply the rational basis test to the Regents' regulation, which is exactly what the district court did in this case, because this court has never applied the rational basis test. It has applied a more rigorous review of this enumerated constitutional right, which this court has judged to be important. And for those reasons, this court should affirm the unanimous decision of the Court of Appeals.
Thank you, Mr. Manley. Honorable Mr. O'Rourke.
Thank you, Your Honors. I wanted to respond to the question that you posed, Justice Bender, about the regulation of a matter of statewide concern and try to get at what the Concealed Carry Act and the other statutes that implemented it really tried to get at. And again, I would direct your attention to 29.11.7.101. And in that, the...
What was that?
29.11.7.101. And in that statute, the General Assembly said, there exists a widespread inconsistency among jurisdictions within the state with regard to firearms regulations. The General Assembly then described inconsistency among local governments of laws regulating the possession and ownership of firearms results in people being treated differently under the law solely on the basis of where they reside and a person's residence in a particular county or city and county is not a rational basis for distinguishing between gun owners. Based upon those findings, the General Assembly concluded that the regulation of firearms is a matter of statewide concern, and that it is necessary to provide statewide laws concerning the possession and ownership of a firearm to ensure that law-abiding persons are not unfairly placed in the position of unknowingly committing crimes involving firearms. That language answers the question that you posed, which is that the General Assembly was responding to an inconsistent framework where various cities, counties, and cities and counties had enacted ordinances criminalizing weapons. In creating the statewide standards, those were the inconsistencies between cities, counties, and cities and counties that it intended to address. And therefore, when you turn to section 214 of the statute, and it describes that it is valid in all areas of the states, read in conjunction there means that it is valid in every city, county, and city and county, and then construing that provision as a whole, you have to read into the next line, which is that it is not intended to apply to the state or preempt any provision of state law, and that a local government is prohibited from passing any regulation that is inconsistent with the provisions of the Act. Read as a whole, that does not express a clear and unambiguous intent to reach the regions. And in fact, when the General Assembly has meant, such as in Ramos, to apply statutes to state institutions, it does so. The Anti-Discrimination Act explicitly applied to, quote, the state of Colorado, as well as its agencies, instrumentalities. It also explicitly included every other person employing persons in the state. In no way does this court have to overrule Ramos in order to find in the region's favor. It simply has to determine that in Ramos, the court spoke with the clear and unmistakable intent necessary to divest the regions of their authority by making a rule that it described as manifesting a singular, a singularly expansive fashion in its definitions, and that it was, quote, virtually all-inclusive. This statute does not represent nearly the singularly expansive fashion, with the preemption clause being limited to local governments, nor is it virtually all-inclusive. It does not include private owners. It does not include K-12 schools. It does not include certain other places, such as K-12 schools, that are otherwise within the jurisdiction of local governments. But the Board of Regents is a separate state constitutional authority and has been recognized by such as this court.
Can I follow up on my question having to do with the construction of the Regents piece of legislation, this rule? The last part of the resolve clause says, where such possession interferes with the learning and working environment is prohibited. The further resolve clause appears to me, at least, to say that what the Regents are getting at is when carrying this weapon is found to have intentionally or recklessly been used or possessed in a way that would intimidate, harass, injure, or otherwise interfere with the learning and working environment. So, in fact, if we were to provide the or analyze this under the normal rules of statutory construction, which I assume apply to this piece of legislation, giving all the words in their context meaning, this is not a total ban. Do you disagree?
Well, first I would agree that the regents have said we don't sanction or we don't approve of having weapons on our campus. But in order to give effect to whatever sanction there is, the regents have specifically said that that applies when the weapon is used in a way to intimidate, harass, injure, or otherwise interfere with the learning and working environment. If necessary, in order to pass constitutional muster, that type of defense must be allowed to be able to say, I haven't used this weapon in a way that would violate the policy. I believe that this court can read this in a manner that preserves the constitutionality of the provision using the plain language of the policy itself.
Thank you, Mr. Rourke.
Thank you, Justice Bendering, members.
The case will be submitted on the arguments and the briefs, and the court appreciates the arguments of both counsel, and the court will take a 15-minute recess.